Good day, and welcome to the 22nd Century Business Update for February 2015 conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Tom James. Please go ahead, sir.
Well, thank you very much. I'm the General Counsel of 22nd Century, and if you'll bear with me, I have to read the required safe harbor provisions. The statements made on today's call that are not based on historical information are forward-looking statements made pursuant to the safe harbor provisions of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Forward statements include, but are not limited to, statements regarding our company's business strategy, future plans and objectives, and future results of operations, or that may predict, forecast, indicate, or imply future results, performance, or achievements. The words estimate, project, intend, forecast, anticipate, plan, expect, believe, will likely, should, may, or in the negative of such words or expressions of similar meanings are intended to identify forward-looking statements. These forward-looking statements are not guarantees of future performance, and all such forward-looking statements involve risks and uncertainties, many of which are beyond the company's ability to control. Actual results may differ materially from those expressed or implied by such forward-looking statements as a result of various factors, including but not limited to the risk factors disclosed in our company's most recent annual report on Form 10-K filed with the SEC on February 6, 2015. 22nd Century does not undertake, and it disclaims any obligation to update any forward-looking statements or to announce revisions to any of the forward-looking statements. During this conference call, we will also disclose certain non-GAAP financial measures, including adjusted EBITDA, which we define as earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, as adjusted by our company for certain non-cash and non-operating expenses described in our earnings press release for the year ended December 31, 2014, as issued on February 6, 2015, which is available on our company's website and the SEC's database called EDGAR. With that, I'll turn it over to our Chief Financial Officer, John Brodfuer.
Good morning, everyone. My name is John Brodfuer, and I am the Chief Financial Officer of 22nd Century Group. I am pleased to provide you with a summary of our 2014 financial results and add my comments on our 2015 financial outlook. For purposes of this call, I'm going to assume that everyone on the call has had an opportunity to review our 10-K and press release filed on Friday, February 6. As such, I will not be providing a complete review of our financial results, but will concentrate on adding some color to areas of greatest interest. During 2014, 22nd Century experienced a net loss of $15.6 million on revenues of approximately $529,000. The 2014 results reflect the costs incurred by the company in its transition from primarily an R&D-focused entity to that of a company with its goal of revenue generation. Our net loss consisted primarily of operating expenses of $11.8 million and other net expenses of $3.8 million, totaling the $15.6 million in net loss. Of the $15.6 million in net loss, $9.5 million, or approximately two-thirds of that amount, consisted of non-cash expenses. These non-cash expenses included, number one, warrant liability-related expenses of $3.8 million. Number two, stock-based equity compensation to officers, employees, and directors of $2.3 million. These primarily related to the January 2014 EIP awards, valued at the then market price of the stock in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. Number three, equity-based compensation to third-party consultants in the amount of $2.2 million. Of this amount, approximately $2.1 million related to the warrants issued to Creed in connection with a six-month consulting agreement to assist the company in its efforts to sell its proprietary tobacco products into the Asian markets. Number four, depreciation expense of $230,000. This is primarily related to depreciation on manufacturing equipment in our North Carolina facility that was purchased in December of 2013, and which we began depreciating in mid-year of 2014. Fifth, amortization expense of $233,000 relating to amortization of our patent costs and various license fees. Number six, $101,000 relating to the loss on our 25% equity investment in Anandia. And finally, number seven, $624,000 relating to severance costs relating to the termination of the company's former CEO. After deducting these non-cash expenses, the resulting cash-related expenses amounted to approximately $6.1 million. These remaining cash expenses, again, of approximately $6.1 million, are essentially equivalent to the negative adjusted EBITDA reported in our press release. The adjusted EBITDA for 2013, after deducting the 2013 gross profit primarily derived from the BAT license agreement in the amount of $7 million, was approximately a negative $2.5 million. Accordingly, the increase in the negative adjusted EBITDA for 2014 when compared to 2013 was approximately $3.6 million. Some of the significant amounts that account for this additional negative EBITDA consist of the following. Number one, approximately $1.2 million in cash expenses related to our North Carolina manufacturing facility. Significant expenses were incurred to start up the facility, and delays in our MSA approval and time required to meet government regulatory requirements resulted in only de minimis sales during 2014 to offset these expenses. Number two, we incurred the increased legal and professional fees of nearly $1 million during 2014 relating to the following, the 25% equity investment in Anandia, the NASCO investment and subsequent MSA approval from the National Association of Attorneys General, the Cree Consulting Agreement and Asian Joint Venture, our S3 shelf registration, advice and counsel on marketing our products in Europe, and due diligence relating to a potential acquisition target. And thirdly, we incurred fees of approximately $175,000 associated with the listing of our stock in March of 2014 on the New York Stock Exchange market. This included initial listing fees, annual fees, and fees associated with the listing of additional shares on the exchange. In addition to the cash used in operating activities, which I just previously went over, we used cash in various investing activities that ultimately we recorded on the company's balance sheet. Cash used in investing activities included, number one, $700,000, of cash was used in the 25% equity investment in Anandia. $250,000 cash was used in the NASCO acquisition. $1,450,000 was used on various license agreements with Precision Plant Sciences, North Carolina State University, and Anandia. $213,000 was used as a cash down payment on the patents purchased from the National Research Council of Canada, or NRC, and approximately $700,000 was used on patent and trademark costs during 2014. Aside from cash needed in 2015 for patent and trademark costs and a payment on the notes payable to NRC in the amount of $333,000, which will be due in December of 2015, we will not be spending similar amounts on investing activities during 2015. Instead, in 2015, we intend to focus our attention on revenue generation, primarily from the manufacture and sale of our Red Sun branded cigarettes, the smoker-friendly cigarette brand, other contract manufactured cigarettes and filtered cigars, and the sale of our Magic brand cigarettes in Europe. We anticipate, as previously reported, revenues from these sales activities to be at least $5 million in 2015. Sales have begun on some of these products in the first quarter of 2015 with an expected ramp up to the $5 million in sales as the year progresses, slower at first, then increasing as we move forward through the year. That concludes my financial discussion. I will now turn the conference over to our President and Chief Operating Officer, Henry Siciliano, who will discuss various 22nd century business highlights. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you again for joining us on today's call. We appreciate you taking the time to hear what we have to say about our exciting company. But before I give you my overview of where 22nd Century stands today, I would first like to address a few questions that our shareholders have already raised. Everyone who knows me knows that I like to address issues head on. And in this spirit, I thought a good place to start my portion of the conference call would be to answer some of the most important questions posed over the last few days. Here are a few. And I guess of the most interest to everyone on the call this morning is, why has 22nd Century share price dropped so dramatically? In a nutshell, I simply do not know, and I can't speculate. However, I can tell you that for as long as I've been with the company, since the spring of 2010, the 22nd Century management team has never been more excited about our business prospects and about our future. I can and will point out that historically our stock traded from July through October 2013 between approximately $1 and $1.70 before we signed our landmark research and development licensing agreement with BAT, the second largest tobacco company in the world. Then, prior to at least five milestone achievements, between February and March 2014, 22nd Century common stock traded between approximately $4 and $6.36, our all-time high. And now today, after signing the BAT deal, after acquiring and opening our 61,000-square-foot manufacturing facility in Mocksville, North Carolina, after becoming the first company in more than 6 years to become a subsequent participating member of the MSA, after closing a $10 million PIPE at $2.58 a share with a strategic investor who is keenly interested in the company's business prospects in Asia, after listing our super premium Red Sun brand on 36 state directories and actually beginning to ship product, and after securing necessary approvals from the National Association of Attorney Generals and beginning to contract manufacture private label cigarettes for the largest dealer network of cigarette stores in the United States, after all that, XXII is trading at around $1 per share today. Truth be told, given all this history and given all the progress we've made, we believe that the current price of our stock is not a reflection of the true value of the company. We are now moving forward with revenue and profit-producing products and initiatives that we believe will substantially increase the value of our company and will subsequently result in a much higher stock price. I am 100% confident of these things. The second question that's been posed to me most often, why hasn't management purchased 22nd Century stock on the open market? I should start out by explaining that, consistent with our insider trading policy, 22nd Century's management has only certain windows of time throughout the year when we are allowed to buy or sell our company's common stock. In December, we were in such a window. However, under the advice of counsel, no employee of the company bought or sold 22nd Century stock because our counsel advised us that we were in possession of material non-public information. In short, we were not allowed to buy or to sell 22nd Century common stock in December. Number three, Will members of 22nd Century Management start to buy or sell company stock in the future? And our answer is simply, if and when our security attorneys give us the green light to trade, I'm quite certain that several members of management will do so. I'm sure that I could proactively address many other shareholder concerns, but I also do not want to circumvent the Q&A portion of the call, which will immediately follow my remarks. So now let me turn my attention to a few important changes at the company and to 22nd Century's strategic outlook for 2015. I will start by saying how important it is for us all of us, management and shareholders alike, to keep focused on the extraordinary applications of 22nd Century's technology. Here is what one fellow shareholder noted just today. I quote, "In situations like this, where the market price of a stock declines more than 80% from its all-time high, I often find it helpful to revisit and rework my initial investment thesis. I spent the afternoon doing just that, and it really helped put things into perspective. The story has not changed since my initial investment. Rather, it has improved rather significantly. The bottom line is that this company, 22nd Century, is uniquely positioned to reduce the harm caused by smoking with a product that consumers will actually use," end quote. This is precisely correct. We have a very powerful mission, to reduce the harm caused by smoking. I don't know another company in the world with the same mission, or with a mission as important as ours. With this mission, we have an unprecedented opportunity to develop substantial business in both the commercial cigarette market and in the smoking cessation market. Which leads me to the press release we issued last week. No offense to our CFO, John Broadfear, but in my view, the two most important paragraphs of the release were actually paragraphs 4 and 5. Paragraph 4 stated that the company's 2014 financial performance reflects a period of transition. I'll say that again, reflects a period of transition. During this period, the company invested and or committed to invest $3.7 million in cash and $2.7 million in stock on intangible assets and intellectual property-related assets, including $2 million in cannabis-related commitments and over $1.2 million in other biotechnology investments with no immediate commercial applications. In my view, we strayed last year from our mission. I can't put it any more clearly than that. In my view, we strayed last year from our mission. Going forward, as clearly outlined in paragraph 5 of last week's press release, the 22nd Century Management team is keenly focused on monetizing the company's vast intellectual property portfolio as it specifically relates to our critical mission of reducing the harm caused by smoking. That is our mission, that is our focus, and that is what everyone on the 22nd Century Management team is committed to doing. As I've explained previously, and as I will continue to emphasize, 22nd Century has recast its priorities to focus on delivering operational results in the following key areas, as stated in the press release. Number one, commercialization of Red Sun super premium cigarettes in the U.S. Number two, launch of Magic very low nicotine cigarettes internationally. Number three, establishment of base third-party cigarette and filtered cigar contract manufacturing business at the company's NASCO manufacturing facility in Mocksville, North Carolina. Number four, pursuit of FDA authorization for one or more of the company's modified risk cigarettes in development. Number five, contracting with a suitable joint venture partner to fund and conduct a phase three clinical trial for X22, the company's tobacco-based smoking cessation aid in development. And number six, establishment of substantial multi-year sales contracts for the company's proprietary tobacco leaf and or finished tobacco products internationally. These are the six areas on which the company is focused, period. I'd like all of our shareholders to understand that. These are our areas of focus. This is where we're going to concentrate our time and our financial resources. The first three areas, commercialization of Red Sun, Magic, and our contract manufacturing business, those areas are where we're going to see our most ratable revenue streams beginning this year. I've stated publicly, and John has reaffirmed, that we expect to achieve at least $5 million in sales this year. Candidly, and I'm sure the lawyers are all going to swallow hard when I say this, I think we will do substantially more than $5 million this year. I'm very confident of that, and that's what we're focused on. the mix of that business will be very important. I think that the lion's share of the business will come from contract manufacturing, but we're focused on all three areas of that business, and we expect each of those businesses to grow each year from now going forward. Perhaps the most important catalysts for our stock and for our company in the near term outside of those ratable revenue-producing areas will be the last three areas that I mentioned. Number four was pursuit of FDA authorization for one or more of our modified risk cigarettes in development, establishment of a joint venture partnership with a company to assist us in commercializing X22, and then, of course, our Asian joint venture opportunities. Looking at those three areas, FDA authorization for a modified risk cigarette for 22nd Century could be a game changer for 22nd Century and essentially for the entire industry. We know that. We also know that it's going to take time, and we want to marshal our resources both in terms of finances and in terms of our personnel on staff to essentially to go as fast as we can to secure an FDA authorization for either our brand A or our brand B. And so I guess a change from our last conference call is that our focus now in the near term is going to be brand A. Instead of beginning exposure studies for brand B in the next 6 months, we are going to instead focus on brand A, on using independent trial clinical data already amassed for brand A, and then conducting a short-term consumer perception study for brand A, and submitting all of this material to the FDA by this summer. That's now our timetable for brand A. On the heels of that, we will begin the exposure studies for brand B, but it's my expectation that those exposure studies are going to make our brand B application simply take longer than brand A. So we've reprioritized, and we will have a brand A modified risk application submitted by this summer. In terms of other near-term catalysts, by reprioritizing X22 to actually a top priority, we believe that identifying a joint venture partner for X22 and identifying a mechanism by which we'll fund a phase 3 clinical trial, we can achieve short-term, very significant shareholder value. To this end, I've tasked our general counsel, Tom James, who has nearly 30 years of IP out-licensing and in-licensing experience, to lead this initiative. Tom has identified companies in Asia, Europe, and in South America with whom we're having discussions over the next several months in an effort to identify a joint venture partner for our crucial phase 3 trials. And then the last topic, which many people have asked about and which many people are very excited about, is our potential business opportunities in Asia. As we disclosed in our press release, we've made substantial progress in that regard. We're very excited about the trips we've made to the Far East, and we're very excited about the Chinese delegation that visited our factory last month. All of these initiatives are setting the stage for a potential joint venture in China in particular, but we also have trips planned to Japan and to Korea in March. So we're excited about all these things. I know that shareholders would like more frequent updates on our progress, and I assure you we would love to give you frequent updates, and we would love to give you news, and as soon as we have news, we will certainly issue that news publicly. But until then, it's simply not possible for us to give you more frequent updates with information that we simply do not have. I guess all those things said, now for the first time in our public company's history, we have a ratable source of revenues beginning. We're tremendously excited about those things. We have a factory that's fully staffed with really outstanding personnel who've been in the industry for decades. We're producing a product that I presented last couple of weeks ago at the TPC conference in Las Vegas, and response to our Red Sun product has been tremendous. Each and every person that has tried that product has told us that it is an outstanding cigarette, which is frankly maybe the most important test for Red Sun. If the consumers like it and enjoy the product, I think we've got an outstanding chance to really rack up some outstanding sales in coming months and quarters. But we're excited about that. We're at the beginning of the process. We have begun to start shipping the product to distributors. I'm sure that distributors are calling on retailers across the country, but certainly on both coasts, in particular in New York and Los Angeles. That's likely where the product will achieve its success early on. And it's going to be slow and steady progress, but we're excited about consumer reaction, we're excited about retailers and their reaction to our trade partners program, and we're excited that we're in some very important distributors already. So these are very important things. We're also very excited about the Magic launch that's going to be taking place in March now. We have regulatory approval for our Magic 0.0 milligrams nicotine product, and actually, we have pre-orders for 360 stores in Spain, and we'll begin shipping that product in mid to late March. So couldn't be happier about that product. And then, of course, this contract manufacturing business and our partnership with Smoker Friendly is going to be very important. So all of these initiatives, combined with the substantial upside we have with modified risk, with a joint venture opportunity with X22, and, of course, with our Chinese joint venture opportunities, make 22nd Century a pretty outstanding company and a pretty exciting stock. I'm sure you have plenty of questions, and we're all here to answer those as best we can. So I guess now we'll open it up to the operator to start taking questions.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question today, you may do so by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question, and we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone the opportunity to signal. And ladies and gentlemen, that is star 1 to ask a question. We will take our first question from Jim McIlree from Chardon Capital.
Thank you and good morning. Henry, you talked about the distributors that you've signed up so far. Are those just for the Red Sun brands? And can you talk about the size of those distributors, that is, how many outlets they address and what you need or what you hope you would be able to get in terms of numbers of distributors and how many outlets they would be able to address by year end?
Okay, that's a lot of questions. I guess we'll start with we're signing up some distributors who are primarily interested in distributing smoker-friendly products. We're signing up other distributors who are primarily interested in the Red Sun product, and then there's some overlap among both of those categories of distributors who will carry both smoker-friendly products and Red Sun. In terms of coverage, one of our distributors ships to at least 40 states. Another of our distributors, as mentioned in the press release that announced the beginning of shipments for Red Sun, at one time was the largest natural American spirit wholesaler in Southern California. And though he has stamping licenses in, I think, over half a dozen states, he's primarily focused on distributing our product in California. So I guess that answers sort of the first part of your question. Right now we're having most success with distributors on the coasts, as I mentioned, and that's probably where a super premium product has the most appeal. But then the smoker-friendly distributors, many of those are actually in the Midwest, and we do have interest among some of those smoker-friendly distributors to begin carrying and stocking Red Sun as well. So I guess I'm not sure I have a number of distributors that we're targeting for this year, but I'm quite confident that we'll have a good base of at least, I would say, 10 distributors this year. Frankly, you only need a handful of distributors really to do what we're trying to do. It would be tremendously, I would consider our success a large degree of success would be achieved if we have some hundreds of retail stores this year. And it's possible that we'll achieve more than that. I guess it depends on consumer pull of the product, especially on the East and the West Coast, and it'll depend on, you know, how fast these distributors reorder. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, that's helpful. And you didn't address BAT at all. Is there any chance that they go straight to a commercial license and just skip over the research stuff, or, you know, where is BAT in all of this? I mean, it seems like it's a ready source of cash, and of course it's not burdened by any expenses, so it'd be pretty high margins as well.
Sure, that's a great question. And as you know, by the terms of our agreement, BAT can commercialize at any time. So, I mean, they can commercialize tomorrow. It's possible. On the other hand, I'm not going to count on that. And frankly, the decision on when to commercialize and their ability to achieve milestones is out of my hands. So the reason why I don't list it as a catalyst is because I don't control it. So it's very possible that BAT will commercialize before the deadline, which is, I guess, within the next 3 years or so. But I can't control it, and I'm going to not predict when a milestone is achieved. Is it possible we'll achieve one or more milestones this year? Yes. Am I going to promise it or count on it? No.
Okay. That's helpful. I'll yield the floor. Thank you.
Thanks.
And as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, star one to ask a question, and we'll go now to James Thomas, a private investor. Sir, your line is open. Please check your mute button.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm James Thomas. I'm an independent analyst. In your discussion earlier, you had made mention of European partners. Could you elaborate with regard to the Benelux, Poland, and Spain with regard to partnering of our products? And number two, if you'd be so kind, is there an update that you can convey to the shareholders with regard to any progress that it's being made in the executive committee in search for a CEO, sir?
Okay, I'll address the first part of the question, and then I'll leave it to Rick Sanders, who is a member of the executive committee, to address the second part of your question. In terms of magic in Europe, I guess I'll outline how this is all going to work. Our initial contract with our Benelux partners was for us to furnish raw tobacco to our Benelux partners. We've rewritten that contract. Our intention now is to ship raw tobacco to our Polish manufacturing partner, Orion, and then we will sell finished cigarettes to Benelux, to Spain, and hopefully this year to partners in Italy and France as well. So what we've tried to do is make the model consistent across all countries in Europe. That's why there was a hiccup with Benelux last year. We thought that it made more sense to pause and to have all of our European partners under the same contracts as opposed to creating separate contracts for each and every country or region in Europe. So I guess that's the best way to describe it. We have a partnership with Orion in Poland to make our cigarettes. Our contract with our Benelux partners has been rewritten, and they will be purchasing finished cigarettes from us. And then in Spain, we'll be selling finished cigarettes. And we have right now pre-orders for 360 stores in Spain, and I'm actually hopeful that we might have triple that number of stores by the end of March.
Could I interject another question with regard to this first question? The ability to produce product and ship raw product to Europe, do you have an idea as to the amount of tonnage that would be specifically sent to these particular production facilities?
Well, there's only one production facility. That's in Poland, and I think what we're going to do is we're going to let the market dictate that. So rather than you know, ship, I don't know, containers and containers of raw tobacco to Poland, we're going to sort of ship it as needed. And so we already have sufficient quantities there that we shipped, I believe, in the fourth quarter of last year in preparation for our launch in Spain in particular. So over the next quarter or two, I might start to have some idea on shipment estimates going forward. But at this point, I'm not going to make a guess before we have any retail data.
Okay. And the second question, you were going to refer to someone else, I assume.
Yes, this is Rick Sanders.
Yes.
I sit on the board. I head up the compensation committee for 22nd Century Board, and I'm also on the executive committee. Let me tell you and give you a little bit of background that the search for a CEO or senior executive at the company is essentially on the plan that we established back in November with the departure of Joe as CEO of the company. As I think pretty much everybody here knows, the transition that you've heard so much about with so many different companies of going from concept to execution is a difficult one. Management has to recognize clearly that there's a lot of hard work and a lot of details that need to be done, and not everything goes according to plan. And that's been pretty much a consistent theme of the entire board over the course of the last 9 months to the management team of the company. We've got to make that transition. Quite frankly, the departure of the CEO in late October of last year was not something that was fully anticipated or planned for by the board. It was a decision that was made. We felt it was necessary based on a great deal of input that we were getting from business partners and suppliers, from the management team, from a number of investors, and a number in the investment community. And that took place, I think, about 2 to 3 weeks after our official fourth quarter board meeting, in a special meeting, and the concerns that were raised relative to moving forward were such that the board felt we couldn't ignore it. That having been said, when that decision was made, we immediately began a couple of steps. The first is that the management team had asked us to assist them in a deep dive into the status of all of our business strategies, making sure that we understood where our IP stood, where our trademarks stood, et cetera. And they also asked that we provide strategic guidance on many of those business initiatives and help them as requested by them in any operational issues that they were faced with. The board also made a decision at that time that we wanted to get a clear sense, because this is a complicated company. Many investors think of it as a biotech company. Many investors think of it as a tobacco company. It's all those things. And therefore, looking at what are the requirements for a CEO focused against making sure that the strategies of the companies are correct and that execution is handed off to the management team, it was really important to the board. We wanted to get a clear understanding of that. We were also, unfortunately, looking at a time frame, November, December, that is rife with holidays. And so we said we would begin a vetting process of who would assist us in this as we were going through this process. And in the first quarter would initiate activity on an actual search based on, again, what we discovered as a result of those deep dives, and then what we also determined as a result of our discussions of what is needed going forward. We vetted three companies at the end of January of this year. We hired a company to assist us in this, and we're anticipating that over the course of the next 2 to 4 months, certainly by the close of the second quarter, we will have made a decision as to how we structure the leadership of this company going forward.
Thank you very much, sir.
And we'll take our next question from Rex Wiggins, another private investor.
Good morning. New investor here, just bought into the company in the last, I would say, 60 to 90 days. Had a couple questions and I guess a general comment. The guy that is it Henry, I believe it is, that's we'll talk there first. I don't get a vote, but it sounds like you know this business pretty well. Maybe you ought to be the CEO. Sounds like you've done a lot in a short period of time.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I mean, you really do. I'm a retired venture capitalist, actually. I guess I have two questions, big ones. I don't know whether the company's ever released any sort of guidance on where a cash flow break-even would be. I know it depends on product mix. What I'm obviously getting at is trying to back into how much cash you have now and how much capital you might need to raise, you know, later this year. That was, you know, one question I had. And then besides cash flow break-even, I guess that's the primary one, is just when do you hit the wall from a cash standpoint, and is there any sort of projected amount that of capital raise that you're at least planning on now that you may need? Oh, I know what the other one was. The people that put in the $10 million box, I haven't really done any due diligence on them, but I was just curious of whether they have any representation on the board. That was the other one.
Okay. Those are very good questions, Mr. Wiggins. Let me say, sure, we do internal cash flow projections, and we're keenly aware of where we are today and where we need to be going forward. As we've stated in the 10K, we project that we'll have enough cash through the end of the year and possibly longer than that. But the primary factors, I guess, in terms of cash flow this year will be not only operations based on Red Sun Magic and contract manufacturing, but will actually be how successful we are or are not in terms of identifying a JV partner with X22 and essentially our Asian joint venture. Both of those activities could generate substantial upfront cash, and you know, I can't tell you yet with certainty that we're going to be successful in those things in the first half of the year or not, but I can tell you that I have focused our entire management team on exactly those activities which you've identified as being very, very important to us. The second part of your question related to the investor that bought $10 million worth of our stock at about $2.58 a share, he does not have board representation. But he is now 22nd Century's largest shareholder, and he is keenly interested, as I might have mentioned, in our Asian joint venture opportunities, and we have significant continuing conversations with him on a very regular basis on what we need to do going forward to be successful in China and or other parts of Asia. So I hope that's helpful.
Yes, it is. It sounds like the... I mean, I still don't know. I guess maybe nobody knows why the federal guy left, but you know, it sounds like you're on the right course in many different aspects. And I kind of gathered that a little bit from I read over, you know, all your, you know, SEC filings and whatnot. And you know, at this juncture, I probably own about 50,000 shares of your stock. But before I buy in deeper, then I'd just kind of like to hear a voice of. To see, do a sanity check of whether there's somebody really at home there or whether it's just going to, you know, burn down. But it looks like you've got everything in place to bring this baby out of the fire, sounds like to me. So
thank you very much. We do appreciate that. And you, everyone is at home and working hard at their desks here. And if you have a chance, I hope you'll join us at our annual meeting in April.
I would love that. Being located out here in the Midwest, that would be a nice little trip. I may just do that.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
And we'll take our next question from Justin DiStefano, a private investor.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. I'm just wondering how many metric tons can you actually produce currently? If you wanted to produce tobacco, how much could we actually produce?
Well, that's a complicated question, but it's an excellent one. In anticipation of possible business opportunities in China, actually, we've spent a lot of time and energy expanding our capabilities, frankly, internationally. We have existing relationships in the United States. The question is really more critical is how much can you produce on what seasonal basis? And so what we can produce in the U.S. is available at, you know, one time of the year, call it the fall, but then what we can produce in South America or in Africa gives us the ability to supply tobacco at other points of the year. So I guess what you're asking, and the answer is it's essentially unlimited.
Okay.
But then the sub part of your question is, how much can you produce in terms of very low nicotine tobacco or in terms of higher nicotine tobacco, and at what season? And I guess the answer there is, we can produce virtually an unlimited supply of very low nicotine tobacco, and the higher nicotine tobacco, we can't produce unlimited supplies yet, but within the next 6 months, we expect to be able to produce tens of thousands of metric tons as soon as we need to. So I hope that answers your question. It's the answer is it depends.
Right. All right. No, I was just wondering, you know, if we're able to, you know, obviously you said the different growing seasons, so that was really where my question lies, is that I guess we can only cultivate once a year, and how long does it take for that tobacco plant to actually grow, and are we actually growing? Obviously we are, because you're shipping stuff. So that was really where the root of my question lies. That's it. Thank you for answering.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
And we'll take our next question from Tyler Whitney from the Loya Marymount Investment Fund.
Hi. So I know you guys have very valuable patents. My question is, when do you intend to use those patents to begin manufacturing brand A and B? Because the longer you wait, the less value you have in them.
That's exactly right. And that's why this year we've sort of recommitted to – we've recast our priorities, and modified risk applications are among the very top of our priorities. So we can't start producing those cigarettes without, for commercial sale, without FDA approval. So the first step is essentially getting FDA approval for a modified risk claim on either brand A or brand B or both. And as I mentioned when I was speaking earlier, our initial plan had been to start with brand B, because we believe that the commercial applications for brand B are tremendous, actually. But we've rethought that a little bit, and we actually think we might have a safer, shorter, less expensive route to an approval with modified risk brand A rather than modified risk brand B. So we've sort of rejuggled our priorities, and we intend to submit a completed application for brand A this summer, and brand B, as soon as we conduct our required exposure studies, we'll submit an application for brand B. I would hope that would be this year, but if it can't be this year, then it will certainly be in 2016. I hope that answers your question.
Okay, it does. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take a follow-up question from Jim McIlree from Chardon Capital.
Yeah, thanks. John, for the cash expenses in 2015, are they likely to be up, down, or sideways relative to the $6 million or so in 2014?
Well, Jim, in 2014, as I mentioned, there were some that have extraordinary expenses that will – like the excess legal fees that'll go away, but we will, you know, incur more expenses, you know, in our facility in North Carolina, but hopefully that will be certainly offset by, sales and revenue generation from the factory. So I think generally it should be flat.
Roughly
going down and
some going up.
Going up.
Roughly sideways, Jim, but it'll be a different mix.
Right, and that's understandable. Okay, that's what I was asking for. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll take our next question from Scott Lee, private investor.
Good morning. Mr. Lee?
Mr. Lee, your line is open. Please
I'm
check
sorry.
Your mute.
You guys hear me good?
Yes, now we can. Thank you.
I'm sorry. My phone was on mute. I don't want to. I have a question for – I was listening in on, for Mrs. Sanders, and this actually doesn't have anything to do with the product, pretty much the council and everything else. I guess he was saying he's part of the executive committee there.
Yes, go
okay.
ahead.
Okay. Yourself and correct me if I'm wrong, is it James – Cornell and Joseph Dunn that are the other members of the committee?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Now, are you
those are three independent directors.
Right, on that executive committee. Now, are you guys, you and the other members, are you compensated for being on the committee? And if so, how much is it?
Well, there's a range of what the compensation can run depending upon people's involvement. But, yes, there is compensation. To give you an example during the, and, of course, all of this will be available as we do filings going forward, but during the months of October, November, December, and January, my involvement at the request of management ran roughly $16,000, somewhere in that vicinity. It's based on a on our hourly involvement in the business. And again, none of that takes place unless it is requested by management.
Okay. Yeah, that helps.
And again, this is kind of what I would refer to as the short-term interim solution until such time as we can make final determinations as to what we want to do, which is obviously anticipated to come to fruition certainly by end of the second quarter to get the management team fully in place.
Okay, great. Thank you for your answer.
Uh-huh.
And we will take our next question from Frank Schiappa, private investor.
Morning, Frank. Morning. How are you?
Great.
I'm looking at Botanical Genetics LLC. What can you tell us about the updates with that, you know, the money that we've placed there as investors?
Okay. Well, what I can tell you is we have some really outstanding IP with Botanical Genetics, and we have an exclusive U.S. license to use and commercialize that IP. So those are some fantastic things. But I'll also tell you, in my list of six priorities, I didn't mention among those Botanical Genetics, and that's because I believe that there will be additional research and time required before that technology is able to be commercialized. So essentially, though it's an important part of our portfolio, and though we're very excited about the future applications of that portfolio, in terms of 2015, it's not on my top six priorities.
Okay, thank you.
And we will take our next question from Brian Wolf with Project Quality, Inc.
Good morning, how are you?
Good morning.
I got several questions. The first question, there were some labeling hurdles for the clearance of sales of Dutch Magic in Europe, right? Those have been cleared up?
Yes. There were, I don't know if they were hurdles, but they were, I guess there were differing opinions among different European regulators as to what labeling would be required and what labeling would be permissible. And to be frank with you, that those requirements might differ from country to country. But at this point, we believe that our packaging is correct and ready to go in Spain, and we think we have a solid understanding of what needs to happen in Benelux going forward, which is now why we have the product scheduled to launch in the third or fourth week of March.
Okay. So expected shipments of product to Europe third or fourth week of March.
Well, from our Polish manufacturer to Spain in the third or fourth week of March, yeah.
Okay. And that's with NASCO or 22nd Century sending the tobacco leaf.
That's exactly right. And, you know, let me give you a little bit of color on the regulations here. Not on the regulations, but on the opportunity and the challenge. The fantastic thing about Magic is it's essentially the world's only nicotine-free tobacco cigarette. And if I'm able to say that, marketing becomes rather easy. But where regulations complicate that message, it becomes a bigger challenge to introduce that product and to explain that product to consumers. So that's what we have to deal with. And in Europe, it's interesting, the nicotine content, tar and carbon monoxide levels are required to be printed on the side of the pack. And our very low nicotine cigarettes actually round down to 0.0 milligrams nicotine per stick. So I mean, in my mind, that's a tremendous competitive advantage for us to be able to tout that to smokers and to be able to explain it to the industry, but we just have to make sure that we don't get crosswise with regulators.
Okay. So just to make sure I'm clear, regarding Dutch Magic in Europe, 22nd Century is expecting revenue by June?
Okay, well, I haven't made a statement about Dutch Magic, but let me restate what
okay,
I said.
You're shipping tobacco leaf to Poland, right, which is Orion. Orion
yeah, it's already
be,
there.
Right, and they'll be the producer of Dutch Magic in Europe. For
okay,
Europe,
so then what I said was that we will ship finished cigarettes in Spain, to Spain and in Spain, the third or fourth week of March. Now, Benelux, we have a contract now. I don't believe that the product will be labeled Dutch Magic. That was a previous label. I believe that the product will be some variation of Magic. And you said by end of second quarter, I think, and actually I think you're close to right, but I don't have a definitive date yet on when cigarettes will be in the market. They might be in the market actually much sooner than that. But I don't have a definitive date for the product to be available in Benelux yet.
Okay. As an investment advisor and also a shareholder, I'm very conservative. So I'm the June date is good enough for me based on what I heard.
Good. Well, I think that's a good estimate.
There you go. Next question is regarding contracts with farmers for the tobacco leaf. 22nd Century currently does have contracts with farmers, and you are currently producing tobacco leaf for Red Sun and Dutch Magic.
We do currently have contracts with farmers, and we produce that. We contract with farmers to produce different kinds of our tobacco, which are for use in different brands. And I'm not going to identify which brands we have contracts for and which we don't. But that, I guess that's a complicated issue. But we do have current contracts with farmers now. And we will have probably more contracts with farmers internationally in 2015.
Okay. And currently, volume to date, tobacco leaf that we have either shipped, 22nd Century has either shipped to Orion or we currently have in storage. Could you give me a guesstimate on the volume?
That's a good question, and to be very honest with you, I don't even know off the top of my head how much tobacco we've shipped to Orion, but I do know that we have pre-orders for 360 stores in Spain, and I do know that there's enough, and I have indications that we might be in as many as three times that many stores by the end of March, and I know that we have enough tobacco to supply initial orders for all of those stores. So that's not a great deal of tobacco, but I know we have more than enough tobacco there to do that.
Okay. So here's another question. Based on the press release regarding shipment of Red Sun to distributors, there was mentioned California, Las Vegas, New York City, Boulder. I'm telling you what, I'm as a quasi venture capitalist, investment advisor, shareholder, I have plenty of time to Google. I have tried to find distributors. I'm trying to find Red Sun. I've lost my mom and dad to cancer as a result of smoking. That's why I believed in this business model. I am from Western New York. I read about 22nd Century in September of 2011. I have been buying shares and giving investment advice to people, friends and clientele of mine about 22nd Century. I cannot find Red Sun anywhere. Can you tell me one store that has Red Sun right now?
I can tell you, I know I have a list of stores that want Red Sun. Right now, the challenge is matching up stores that want Red Sun with distributors who have Red Sun. So distributors are licensed to stamp in certain states. And then you have retailers that might even be in those certain states, but then they have preferred distributors that they like to buy from. So literally, having just launched the product, last month, it's a process. And, I've heard shareholders say, hey, I've gone to my local 7-Eleven or I've gone to my local convenience store and it's not there, it is highly unlikely that Red Sun will be in any of those national convenience chains. I really don't want it in the national chains. Red Sun will start first at independent stores, at independent grocers, at tobacconists, at smoke shops, at mom-and-pop stores, especially in those markets you saw in that press release. And at this point, our store locator on our Red Sun website, I don't think it has stores listed yet, although it probably will in the near future. So I would ask you, you could do us a favor, if there's a store near you that you'd like to carry Red Sun, please print out the Red Sun request form and ask your local retailer to request the product. And then we will assist that retailer in buying from a distributor who either already has the product or who will begin to carry the product. And I must mention to you, you know, I should say I thank you for being a longtime shareholder of the company, and thank you for your continued your interest, obviously. But if you didn't know, my background, I came from Natural American Spirit at Santa Fe Natural Tobacco Company. And at Santa Fe Natural, we built the American Spirit brand one store at a time through those independent retailers, through tobacconists, through smoke shops. And after a period of years, only then, after RJR had bought us, essentially, did the product start to become more widely available in chain stores across the country. So we'll pursue a very similar growth strategy here.
I do know quite a bit about you, young man. You are actually part of the sales pitch.
Thank you.
To my clientele. So your experience in the sales and marketing cigarettes is part of the sell. So anyhow, here's the next question. I called Cigar Cartel. Are you there?
Yes, okay. I'm here.
So Cigar Cartel in Sun Valley, they are expecting shipments, right? Cigar Cartel, maybe I should not be mentioning this over the telecom. As an independent distributor, they're also a marker, right? So that's stamper. As the terminology, you're more than welcome to correct me. But they are currently waiting for the cigarettes. So Red Sun, I'm referring to. So would I expect? And I travel, so I'm going to be in California next week. I'm going to be in Vegas in March. I just want to find out where I can find them, where I can tell my clients, right, where they can be located. Can you give me one name of one distributor that actually, based on the press release, product has already been shipped? Can you tell me one distributor that
actually? Well, we've already shipped the Cigar Cartel, so if they don't have the product yet, I'm surprised, and maybe they'll have it now. I'm not sure when you checked with them, but we've shipped the product to Cigar Cartel. Pardon me?
I talked to them Monday.
Okay, well, then they should have it maybe already now or maybe any day, okay. But we certainly shipped the product. We shipped the product to another large distributor in California, Cretec, and I'd be surprised if they didn't have it already.
Give me the name of that one more time, Henry. I'm sorry.
Cretec, K-R-E-T-E-K, which is parent company to Phillips and King.
Okay, gotcha.
So there's two in California. We've also shipped the product to distributors, I believe two in New York. But anyway, if you start with California, that would be a good place because I expect the product to do very well in Southern California.
Excellent. Fantastic. Okay, so.
Hello? I think I've lost you. Hello?
You there?
I'm here now. Yes, I can hear you now.
All right. Your return on investment with the Creed Consulting and obtaining share in the Asian markets, is there a timeline? I mean, I know there's – look, you're conservative too, right? Is there a timeline on an agreement made with the Asian market? Is it 2016?
You know, I guess what I can tell you is that our strategic investor would like us to do a deal sooner rather than later. And frankly, he believes that this might be, you know, our most exciting opportunity in the near term. So he would like us to do something, you know, right away. And frankly, I'm sure he would have been happy if we did something in 2014. So what I'm going to say is it's a top priority for 22nd Century to sign a deal in 2015 if we can. But if not, then we'll move forward on our other initiatives. Right now, I mean, it takes two sides to sign a deal, and we're ready and willing to do that. And our Asian partners have to agree to whatever deal we ultimately negotiate.
Okay. Good job. Okay, I got one more question, and I'll let you guys go.
Okay.
Okay, and have all the hurdles been cleared regarding the National Association of Attorney Generals, their approval for sales of Red Sun in every state in the U.S.?
Yes, the NAG approvals are all in hand. Now, there's something called listing on state directories, and we are listed on, I want to say, 36 or 37 state directories right now, including the District of Columbia. So that means we can sell now in those 36 or 37 states. There are an additional, I don't know, whatever it is, 14 states or so that we are still waiting for approval to be listed on those state directories. But that doesn't slow us down from the first 36, which include, by the way, California and New York. So,
okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Okay, bye-bye.
And we will take our next question from Louis Pacone. He's a private investor.
Hi, my name is Louis. I was calling because I wanted to ask a question about when I could expect to see Red Sun in a retail location. I understand that it sounds like they're with the wholesale distributors now, but wasn't sure if you had a projection as far as when the first retail sales would take place.
If they haven't already taken place, I would think any day, frankly. And those initial retail sales, again, will likely be in Manhattan and or in Southern California. I have no way of, you know, we aren't selling directly to the retailers. We don't have stamping licenses, so we have to ship the product to the distributors, and the distributors ship it to the retailers. So I can't say definitively what retailers have the product and when the first sale did take place or will take place, but I expect that if they haven't already, they will any day in both Manhattan and in Southern California.
Okay, so then your website where it's going to state where the vendors where you can purchase the Red Sun cigarettes, do you know when you would expect to see that updated so that it provides the list of vendors?
We'll update that continuously as soon as either retailers or consumers make us aware of where the product is being shipped or being sold.
Okay, and then the final question for revenue, your revenue that you generate, is that based on sales to the wholesalers, or do you, are your sales revenue figures based on? Does it require retail sales, or have you?
No. You're exactly right. Our revenue for Red Sun will be our revenue to wholesalers, distributors. Our revenue for Magic will be essentially the same thing in Europe. And then our contract manufacturing revenue is the price that our contract manufacturer clients pay us, but our revenue will have nothing to do with the retail price of the products.
Okay. So then you already are well on your way to booking revenue for 2015 then?
That's exactly right, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And we're very proud of the fact that we will have substantial revenue this year. I'm quite sure of that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we will take our final question from Elliot Robbins from Robbins & Robbins.
Hi, Henry. Good job with this conference call. I'm a private investor.
Oh, well, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. And I was a little concerned when you were talking to one of the last callers about he should get out to his preferred retail outlet and ask them to request that Red Sun be stocked. I'm wondering if either you or your distributors have some kind of active program whereby your sales representatives or the distributors' representatives are out there, they're paid, and they're incented to actually go into these mom-and-pop stores, these independent smoking shops, to try to generate interest in the product. I mean, that's not something that's the shareholders' obligations. We're assuming that you've got a plan in place to have people, you know, working the streets and getting the word out there.
Yes, and that's an excellent point. It's actually a combination. And again, reflecting on my experience at Santa Fe Natural, I'm not so much asking investors to go out and knock on doors for me. What I'm doing is I'm asking smokers who would like to purchase the product at a favored retailer to ask those retailers or that retailer that a smoker would like to patronize. I'd like those smokers to ask their favored retailers to carry the product. But in terms of distributors selling the product, that's exactly right. There are distributors that will go and do outbound telemarketing campaigns and do present the product at tobacco conventions and tobacco shows. And frankly, 22nd Century will attend four or five tobacco shows this year as well. We just came back from one a couple of weeks ago, and we've got four more scheduled this year. So, yes, we'll be introducing the product to retailers and to wholesalers. Wholesalers will certainly be introducing the product to their retail clientele. And at the same time, we ask that smokers who would like to try Red Sun and who would like to buy Red Sun, we ask that those smokers ask their retailers. This is exactly the model that Santa Fe Natural used. And essentially, it's a cost-effective model. If I were to engage wholesalers with a large-scale SPIF program where they were out pushing the product, unfortunately, what would likely happen is the product would go to thousands of stores that wouldn't really know or understand the product, and it might sit behind the counter or on a lower shelf space, and the retailer behind the counter would never talk about the product. It wouldn't sell, and then the product would be returned a year later. We don't want that. We want the product to be in stores where the retailer understands it, where the retailer appreciates the Trade Partners program, and perhaps where a smoker has introduced the product so that the retailer has a built-in customer for the program.
That's an excellent answer, Henry. I appreciate it. And just one general follow-up. I just want to make sure of one thing. You're projecting at least $5 million in revenue for fiscal year 2015 from the Red Sun super premium product.
No, I'm sorry. I'm projecting at least $5 million and likely substantially more than $5 million, by the way, for a combination of our sales of Red Sun, Magic, and our contract manufacturing business.
So that would be all three of those entities, American sales, European sales, and any contract manufacturing as well.
Exactly right. And again, it's you know, some people might think that's not very much, and some people in the industry might understand that that's actually substantial sales. We believe that's a stepping stone, and we believe that if we get that base of sales in 2015, we will have an outstanding foundation on which to build in 2016 and 2017.
And I would agree with that, and that would be a huge increase from the $530,000 in revenue for fiscal year 2014.
Exactly. Thank you very much. That's right.
Well done with the conference call, and keep up the good work in moving the company forward.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate your time this morning, and for all the callers who made the time to listen in, we appreciate that very much.
Thank you.
And ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's question and answer session, and this also concludes today's conference. We do thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.